Hello and welcome to Multiform. Every week we get together to talk about the Xbox news, rumors, and games we've been playing lately. New episodes post every Monday morning. You can email the show at questions@multiformpodcast.com. This is episode 227. I'm Tim Shelton, and this week I'm joined by my friends Gus Harden.
Hello.
And special guest Brett Kimmerling.
Hello.
Brett, thank you for joining me. I gave you 5 minutes notice that you were going to be on the show, and you came through. If you guys listen to the show, you know Brett's been on twice before. Quick intro bio for him is we met playing Destiny 1, The Taken King, the year that came out, and we've been playing games together ever since. So we frequently play a lot of Battle Royale. He's been trying to get me into Escape from Tarkov. You name it. So that's the background there. Brett, again, thanks for showing up on such short notice.
Not a problem.
And the segue there is Spencer is out today because he had family holiday get-togethers going on today, so we couldn't get him to record. And I wanted to have a third person on the show this week because this is going to be our final episode of 2022. So normally we do 52 shows a year, but I think we've taken one or two episodes off in 4 years. But this year, I think we're going to take off. Well, I don't think we are. We're going to take off Christmas weekend and not record a show for Monday. What's the date? Monday the 26th, which would be the day after Christmas. So our next episode, that means we'll publish on January 2nd, which is the new year. So with this being the final year or final episode of the year, we'll talk about the normal news and things that have happened this week. And then we'll talk just a little bit about 2022 and what we liked, what we didn't, what we experienced, and just kind of, you know, I think a lot on the show this year, we complained about how there were fewer big releases than other years. And the ones that did come out seemed to land with a giant thud. There were a couple of solid releases, actually more than a couple. And I've got some thought starters in our notes here, but we'll get to that toward the end of the show. But before we get to that, we always start with the games we've been playing this week and what we've gotten up to. And I'm going to start by letting our guest, Brett, go first. Brett, what have you been playing lately?
For people who probably caught the last episode, some of this isn't going to be too different. I have been still playing Escape from Tarkov, grinding away at that, just working on it and getting ready for the new wipe that's going to kick off here probably in about a week. I've also been playing Modern Warfare 2, not doing a lot of DMZ or Warzone yet, still mostly just multiplayer, though I did take a crack at the raid the other night. We got what I think was almost to the end, but that last room is pretty rough and it was already pretty late at night, so we called it quits before we got finished.
You know, I don't have another crew to do the raid with, so if you guys do that again, I would love to join because I want to experience it, but like Destiny, I don't really have a group to do it with besides your crew. So,
sure.
Yeah, text me. I would love to check that out. In fact, okay. I bet Gus would even enjoy it if you needed another person, the raid, Call of Duty raid, Gus. It's the first one ever, so I think it would be cool to experience.
It's maximum three characters. I think you have to have three people in it.
Is it max or min? So it's just three. You have to have three people.
I think so. I mean, you could probably start it without three, but there's puzzles in there where you need all three people. So
it's so interesting. I don't even know how to envision what a Call of Duty raid could be in my head. Like, it sounds very interesting. I'm sure it's less complex than Destiny, but more complex than what's that game that had all the puzzles that Ubisoft made? Phoenix Rising is the one I'm thinking of.
Oh. I never played that.
Okay, yeah, cool. Modern Warfare. What else? Anything else you've been up to?
I did actually reinstall Skyrim on my PC and futzed around with that a little bit to get my mods working properly. But other than that,
I've been seeing so much stuff about Skyrim like recently. It's like everybody is all getting back on Skyrim at the same time, apparently.
Yeah, it did seem like there was a resurgence. Like,
a while back when I added a secondary hard drive to my computer, I moved all my Steam files over to that hard drive and off my other one. And when I did that, all my Nexus mod stuff broke. It doesn't like it when you move the files. So what I had to do was uninstall and reinstall Skyrim and then re-upload all the mods and stuff like that.
Dealing with all that stuff is why I don't want to upgrade my... my secondary hard drive in my computer is an old HDD. It's a hard, it's an actual spinning plate disk. And I want to upgrade it to an SSD, but linking all of my stuff, like some of my cloud backups and stuff are linked to that drive. And so if I replace the drive, I need to have like the drive letter and everything match up all the paths, and it sounds like a nightmare. So I just continue using that spinning disk drive, knowing that it's going to fail someday. And I'll be up a creek then, but
yeah. I did install, but have not started New World yet. It's on sale on Steam right now.
I've heard good things about that.
It started out rough, but I guess right now it's in a pretty good state. So I got another buddy who's getting some PC parts and going to put it all together here very soon.
And that's the Amazon published game, right?
Yep.
Timely for that to be a topic.
Yeah.
Because we're going to talk about that in the news. Cool. That's like, how would you describe the genre of that? Because it's kind
of an MMO.
Yeah. Okay. Gus, I'm going to save you for last because I know you've been playing Midnight Suns, which is a new release. So I'm going to wait and have you do that last. So for me, I got up to a lot of new stuff this week. The only new old thing that I really played was Doom Eternal, The Ancient Gods. I was trying to wrap that up, but I didn't get as far as I'd like to. So I checked out Vampire Survivor. This is that indie like darling that everybody's talking about. I'm not hooked on it the way everybody else is so far, but I do like it. The simplicity of the gameplay, how you don't control the attacks, they just happen. So really you're just doing movement. And I think it's on PC, Xbox, and now it's on mobile. So I think you can pretty much play it anywhere but PlayStation. And yeah, so it's interesting. I'm not yet hooked on it, but it's only like a gig. So I downloaded it to my phone, my Xbox Series X and my Xbox Series S, so that I could just play it whenever. Then yeah, Brett, what's up?
Isn't this one that's got like a timer or something in it for playing the game?
No, it's not a timer. It's okay. Like it's, I don't know. It looks like an 8-bit, 9-bit game, or 9-bit. Why did I say nine? Eight or it looks like an 8-bit game, and you're just a little vampire or hunter guy running around killing like bats and stuff, and you have like Bibles and garlic and all this stuff.
Okay,
but your attacks. They just happen, right? So like you have a knife, he'll just keep slashing every like 10 seconds. And then as you level up by killing people, you get new abilities like slashing faster or moving faster.
Okay.
So it's almost like it's like Geometry Wars, but combat instead of a ship, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Like stuff's coming at you just like Geometry Wars. You know what that is, right? The ship game where you shoot all the asteroids and stuff.
Yeah.
It's just like that, only you're a vampire hunter instead of a ship, and instead of asteroids, it's bats and like monsters and stuff. And it's an indie darling, and now it's on Game Pass, so you can download it, or the Android version's free, or iOS version's free. So,
okay.
And then The Witcher 3 Complete Edition. So the new next-gen update is out. The ray tracing looks really good. It's only 30 FPS, which kind of stinks. But the visuals are great. And so I've been playing a ton of The Witcher 3. That's probably the main game I've been playing this week. And this is my second playthrough of The Witcher 3. But my first playthrough, I didn't finish. But I took such a time off that was so long that I had to go back and start over because I didn't know where I was or what I was doing. And none of it made sense. So I just started over. And that was a few years ago. I think I even talked about it on the podcast. But it's one of those games on my shame list that I just never finished. It's like one of those iconic games that I never finished.
Same.
Yeah, so I've been doing that. And then I actually finally, I didn't think I would ever play this game, but I'm playing High on Life, the Justin Roiland Rick and Morty creators game that's on Game Pass. It's an Xbox exclusive. And all the reviews are pretty right on this. It's an average first-person shooter with really over-the-top humor, and you either like the humor or you hate the humor.
It looks pretty funny.
I'm in the camp of I mostly like the humor. Like, there's a joke within the first hour when you get the knife, and he is like obsessed with killing and stabbing and murdering. So like he wants you to take him and jab him into everything. And there's all kinds of jokes about it. But one of the jokes when you are using him in one of the first times is he says, he's like ranting, like stab, 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 kill, kill, kill. And then he goes, I think he says knifey only speed run any percent run or something. And I was like, that's a speed running joke. And I thought it was hilarious. I'm not doing it justice because it's not in his humorous voice with the cadence of the way he delivers it. But I thought it was very meta. And there's a lot of meta jokes in it, but there's also a lot of that Rick and Morty, like really over the top humor. It doesn't all land, but I think more for me personally, more of it lands than doesn't. The gameplay is just average. Like the guns, like so far I only have a few guns, but kind of gives me vibes of like if Rick and Morty and Borderlands had a baby.
Yeah.
That's pretty loot accurate. Like Borderlands, but it tries to be funny the way Borderlands tries to be funny. But it's also just like, it's just such ridiculous over the top stuff. Like when you start the game, you're in a bedroom for one of the characters, and their wall is just covered with movie posters that are ripoffs of real world movies, and they're all funny. So there's just stuff like that. So it's a short game. I've heard it's only 8 to 12 hours long. So hopefully I'll probably stick with it. Maybe not super recently because I'm trying to stay with The Witcher 3 and just play that all the way through without like losing sight of my progress again. But we'll see. Okay, with that, let's go to Gus. Gus, I am excited to hear from you because you weren't on last week, and I know you've been playing Midnight Suns. And after the huge disappointment that was Gotham Knights, I am interested in hearing about this game and how you're liking it, what you like, what you don't. And I don't know, regale me with Midnight Suns.
All right, so gotta say one thing first about Midnight Suns. It looks like a game from Xbox 360. it's really not good. The graphics are pretty terrible in this. It's like 60 FPS from what I can see. My eyes aren't as attuned to that as you are, but which as it should be. But like these characters, like they look like their character design, especially Iron Man, looks like something out of Marvel Ultimate Alliance 2. Which isn't a bad thing to me.
Kind of smudgy, low poly.
Really. And then the faces too have like zero texture to them. It's just kind of wild. Like it looks like something straight out. It's like they spent more time on the graphics of the cards than they did on the actual character models. So that's like my only real gripe. That and there's a lot of narrative. And I don't know a whole lot about the Midnight Suns storyline or anything like that, so I really don't care that much about it. But I do really like the gameplay. And that might be because I'm on a Marvel Snap kick or what. But it's like, it's hard. It is hard because you only have so many card plays per round that you can use. And it's usually 3, sometimes 4. So you do have to kind of manage your plays well. And there were parts of it. I was doing like a side mission, so I got through the tutorial, got through the first couple story missions, and then it like opens up the world for you to do like side missions and level up your heroes. And with that, it was like you have like gamma coils that you can use to unlock new abilities or upgrade abilities. And then you have Intel caches, which you can use to get like your research level up and do other stuff like that. But that all comes back to the central gameplay point of the card system, where rather than and I didn't play XCOM, so I don't know if XCOM had a card system or if it was just like you play it and you have your like moves per match and then you do.
XCOM was more like Gears Tactics. It did not have the card system. It had, like, you know, you click ability buttons for your characters or you know, like shoot or dodge or whatever, and it was turn based. But no, the card thing is new.
And so also like XCOM, or I'm sorry, unlike XCOM, there is no like cover system in this game. It is all wide open. Every map is wide open. So there's no hiding from getting attacked. Like, you are going to get hit, like, at least on normal difficulties until you get later on the game. I don't know. But you're going to get hit every single match. Like, there's no avoiding it. So you might as well embrace it. So I guess my main takeaway so far has been that it's like XCOM, but not really. And like I said, it's almost like a hybrid. Like, Tim, you mentioned this, almost like a hybrid between like XCOM and Marvel Snap. But like, Marvel Snap is like, it's the card system works completely different from this because of the fact that your cards in this are moves, versus your cards on Marvel Snap are like characters. So when you are able to focus your moves rather than choosing which characters you're using, because you go into each mission with three characters, then you have the cards that you can play with, and then those have like your different moves. Like, some of them are attacks, some of them are buffs, some of them are environmental moves. So yeah, it's definitely a very strategic level of gameplay that, like, it took me a second to really get into it. And there was like a week where I didn't even like touch it, because I was just like, I had so much trouble the week before, the last time I had played it, with doing well, even on normal difficulty, that I was like, I put it down for a second and I was like, I'll come back to it. And so now I've come back to it. And I've played it like an hour or two every day for probably the last week.
So according to howlongtobeat.com, the game, just main story, is 32 hours, main plus side missions is 65 hours, and the average is 63 hours. Completionist is 82. So this is a sizable game, although there aren't a ton of ratings. There's only 18 ratings, but still, 63 hour average for 18 ratings. I mean, that's really high compared to all these 6 to 20 hour games that have come out recently.
That's significant.
That is significant.
Yeah, like, I don't even have... I probably have just over half the characters unlocked. Like, I don't even have Spider-Man yet, or Captain America, or any of these other people, or Wolverine. I just have like the classic Midnight Suns, and then you get Iron Man and Doctor Strange and Captain Marvel. Like, they just come in because the actual Midnight Suns themselves are Blade, Ghost Rider, Magic, and Nico Minoru. And then you have the three people that are added, and then you get characters throughout the game. So I haven't even added Spider-Man or anything yet. I think he's like my next story mission. But speaking of like Nico and like all these other people, I was looking at the cast list, and they actually have the actress that played Nico Minoru. She's back for the voice in this of Nico.
Played her on the show
Runaways.
Called?
Yeah, The Runaways.
Yeah, The Runaways. I like that show. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, you have Yuri Lowenthal, who was 2018 Spider-Man, Peter Parker. So he is Spider-Man in this as well. And then there was somebody else that...
Laura Bailey is Magic.
Yeah,
Magic.
Laura Bailey. But Laura Bailey's in... Dang, it seems like she's in everything.
Everything.
One of either Nolan North or... What's his name? Something Baker.
Troy Baker.
Troy Baker. I think one of them is also in this. And those people are literally in quite every single game known to man. At least one of those three is in it. They're like the big three of video game voice acting. So it's kind of cool that they have like these people, because it's like the voice acting and everything is good. Like, there's nothing bad about that. But yeah, it's just like I said, the whole 2010, 11, 12 level of graphics is like very like jarring at first when you play, because everything just looks smooth. There's not like a whole lot of texture to anything. But I mean, I've been enjoying it. I think the addition of the Hunter is cool. That's like your player character, and they have better abilities. I like Blade a lot in this. Doctor Strange.
He's
fun.
Played by Michael Jai White.
Yes,
very cool.
Who I also like. I haven't unlocked a whole lot of costumes or different outfits for heroes yet. I have one that I use for Captain Marvel. Which I like, and then I have There's one for Magic, which is cool. And then I think I just unlocked one for Iron Man. I haven't looked at it yet, though. But there's still a lot of this game to be played. But this is just kind of like my general first glance at it, really. Because I've only I played like one mission a night. And because like each one of them takes like 30 minutes. And then you also have the like the nighttime scenes where it's like you have like clubs that you can do with like the other heroes. And like I'm in one, like they call it emo kids, but it, like the emo kids, like each letter stands for something. And I don't remember what it is, obviously, because it's seven words. And then you have what's up?
Oh, I was just going to say, I fell down the rabbit hole with the cast, and Jennifer Hale plays Lilith.
Yes.
The villain, and Nolan North is in the game, but he's only in the DLC. He plays Deadpool.
That's right. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Because he voiced Deadpool in the Deadpool game.
Yeah.
Several years back. All five or six voices of Deadpool.
I wonder what that game's worth now.
I don't know. It's still fun, though.
Yeah, I still have that. I have that on disc.
It looks horrible, but it's fun, though.
Yeah, it is fun. It's very funny.
It looks just like Midnight Suns now, honestly. Are those Deadpool games from like 2011?
360.
Yeah, 360.
No, I have the Xbox One version. It was like 2014.
It originally released on 360.
You're right. Yeah. I forgot it's a remaster.
So, yeah. I don't know. Sorry if my synopsis so far has been disappointing. I haven't really had a whole lot to get into it because you spend like it's like half the time I'm playing it. Half of it, one half of it is the mission. The other half of the hour that I'm playing it is like walking around talking to everybody because it's like you get too much good stuff from talking to them that you need that you like have that you're like forced to talk to them all. Or at least like do something activities with them, which is like kind of annoying, but it's like I know
you get big buffs if you become like their friends.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like you have to like take the time to like befriend these heroes and I'm like I don't care to do this. But
honestly
like
reminds me of how in mechanic. You had the girlfriend mechanic in Grand Theft Auto 4, and I found it so annoying. I never did it. I didn't want to take.
I think
drive him to the movie and then drive him home.
Yeah, Dragon Age Inquisition. That's what I said this game looks like, which is technically it's like an early Xbox One era game, but
2014, I think.
Even the little like down to like when you like increase your friendship level with people, like the icon that you get, like when you would do like your. Like stuff with like your lover or whatever in Dragon Age, it's like the same icon, like the heart. It's like the same thing. It's wild. Like there's so many things about this game that remind me of Dragon Age Inquisition and how it like plays, how other people move. Because it's like you can't even they have like the Abbey, which is like the hub between missions, and you can't even like jump around in it. So. And you can't like walk over things, so it's like if you have to walk on designated paths. It's so wonky. Like I said, it's like such like a linear gameplay style that I haven't seen in like hub areas for years.
I don't know. There was another recent game where I was in a hub like that where you couldn't do anything. But like, oh, you know what? It's Gotham Knights. You can't jump or anything during that in that hub of that game.
Yeah, it's like yeah, what is it? Like I don't
suddenly you lose all of your abilities and all you can do is walk very slowly and talk to people.
Yeah, and I'm like, it's kind of like Destiny. Yeah.
Well, at least Destiny you can like jump over a railing and kill yourself.
Yeah,
if you want.
Yeah, you can't even do that.
You can run too. You can sprint. You can't sprint in Gotham Knights.
You'll have like a staircase, like a little small staircase that like or
kick a soccer ball around in the hangar.
Yeah, like you can't even like walk over the rocks that are like on the side of it. I'm like, what is this? It's so like I said, the gameplay is cool and everything, but it seems like it's like that was like their only focus point, and they're like, no, we don't care about how the rest of this looks.
I mean, their games aren't all exactly graphical powerhouses. Like XCOM is a
true,
you know, a top down. What?
Yeah,
Brett,
who makes this game?
What's their name?
Man, I can't even. I don't even remember. I just looked at it not too long ago.
XCOM developer. Why can I not remember?
Because Firaxis Games XCOM made this. Mm.
So. Yeah, so they made XCOM 2, and then XCOM Enemy Unknown, and then this.
But
they make tactical, you know, strategy games or not?
Yeah,
not tactical strategy. I don't know, turn based strategy. Yeah. Or I don't know what you would call this genre. But
I mean, it works. Like I said, it's fun. Like, the gameplay is fun, and like having to be strategic with it is cool. So I'm getting into it. I think I just need to get into it more and unlock the new heroes, like Captain America and Wolverine and Spider-Man, and then I'm sure I'll be fine.
Yeah, it does seem like this game is getting generally good reception. I just think it's in a genre that it's much more niche than an action adventure game like Gotham Knights is. Which kind of stinks, because I am interested in this game, but not enough to sink 60 hours into it. So
yeah, I don't know. I'm, like I said, I bought it. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, I'm glad. It's good. I continue to want to hear updates from you about it, because I'm going to live vicariously through you.
So it's definitely not bad. That's for sure. I will say it's not bad. Like, it's not Gotham Knights bad. So
it's not like me ranting about Gotham Knights every week. Brett, as someone who listens to the show when you're not on the show, how did you feel about all my Gotham Knight ranting? How did it make you feel about the game?
It definitely made me not want to even look at picking it up.
I've never been so mad about a game. Like, I said I would play it good or bad, and I did, and I beat it. But man, am I salty about it.
I remember sending you a text that I felt bad that you paid for that game, but I'm glad that you didn't pay full price for it because you got it with gift cards or whatever.
Yeah, I did the Newegg 90% off or 10% off gift card situation, but I mean, yeah, at least the story was fun. I don't know. Now I'm trying to justify it to myself.
Don't worry about it.
Hey, at least it makes for an entertaining podcast where everyone else can live vicariously through my life's mistakes.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get into some news. Obviously, as we're approaching the end of the year and most people have already put out all their games and are saving any news that they might have for the new year, with the Game Awards last week being kind of the last hurrah for big game news in a given year, there are a few things that snuck out this week, and we'll talk about those. And the first one being, and this is probably the biggest one of the week, is Crystal Dynamics is teaming up with Amazon Games to publish and, I believe, co-fund the next Tomb Raider game. So I pulled a quote from the press release here, and I'll read that and then we can talk about it. Amazon Games and Crystal Dynamics today announced they've reached an agreement under which Crystal Dynamics will develop a new multi-platform Tomb Raider title, with Amazon Games providing full support and publishing the game globally. The as yet untitled new Tomb Raider game is a single player, narrative driven adventure that continues Lara Croft's story in the Tomb Raider series. I think I had another quote, and I guess I copied it somewhere else, but they basically said this will be the biggest Tomb Raider game yet, the biggest and largest and most impressive, which obviously these are the kinds of things you say in a press release, which is probably why I didn't put it in here, because it's just PR BS. But they did also harp a lot about this being like a new way of doing publishing that is enabled by them being acquired by Embracer, right? Because Embracer could publish this with any one of their publishing arms, but instead they were able to make an agreement with an outside party, maybe get some extra funding. And, you know, Amazon is obviously dropping a lot of money right now to get into game publishing. So it's interesting. Gus, Brett, anything jump out at you guys about how you feel about this? I don't know, Brett, how much of a Tomb Raider fan you are. I was a huge fan of the last three games.
I've played part of the reboot, the first game.
Yep.
And I enjoyed it. I just got distracted away from it and haven't gone back and finished it. I haven't played the follow-ups either. But what I got to play of that first one, I did enjoy, was fun. It is something I would like to get back to at some point.
Do you have any initial gut feelings? Like, do you have any, like, what's your reaction to Amazon Games being in this? Because my reaction was, okay, I mean, if they're just funding it and publishing it, and, you know, the creative license is still with Crystal Dynamics, okay, that's fine. I liked all the Crystal Tomb Raider games. It just seems like, you know, a money partnership, and Amazon obviously wanting to get into games, doing it with a successful franchise is probably a great way to do it.
Yeah, I think that there's definitely positives that can come from it, as long as they are mostly hands off and allow Crystal Dynamics to just do their thing and make this game. Because we've seen Crystal Dynamics make some really good games with those other Tomb Raider games that they made. We've also seen them make some not great, great games with Avengers. So
it depends. Which in retrospect looks really good when you compare it to Gotham Knights.
Yes.
Still had some rough edges though.
So but. Yeah, I'd like to see Amazon be pretty hands off and just be a financer and publisher for this. So, but they've got deep pockets, and if they need a lot of money to make this game the best it possibly can be, that's probably the best place to look.
I also wonder at what point they're going to stop supporting Avengers with its live service model, because they just released a new hero. Winter Soldier, which is the first one that I didn't even bother checking out in the game because they completely turned me off to the game, even though I did enjoy the story way back when I played it. But the live service model of it is just the most infuriating thing. And so that's a new player, and they seem to have some content planned for the rest of this year. Nothing too big. This new game is being developed on Unreal Engine 5. It's got to be at least, you know, this is just now a funding agreement, so we're not going to really hear anything about this for probably 3 years. So at that point, we could maybe not even be talking about PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X. We could get an announcement for next-gen consoles or cross-gen or something at that point.
Yeah,
so,
it's possible.
I think this is just interesting at this point because it's different, right? They could have had Embracer or any of Embracer's publishers under their umbrella publish this. And it's interesting that it isn't. It's that it's something different, which brings outside money. It can bring benefits. It can also bring negatives, as Brett said. Like, we don't really want Amazon being too hands-on when they clearly don't have the experience and are just dipping their toes into publishing. So, Gus, if you don't have any thoughts about Crystal Dynamics and Amazon games, I'm going to move on to the next story.
I mean, I I've played all the Tomb Raider games, and I like them all, or at least the last two, so I'm excited to get another one.
Me too. And remember, they said that they were going to try and bridge the new franchise with the old with this next title. So I'm interested to see how they do that as well, especially since the gameplay in the old ones is really hard to go back to with the whole, it's even worse than tank controls. The whole like turn, move, turn, move. You couldn't even go to like diagonal. It was very weird. Well, you could, but you had to like turn that way and then push up on the D-pad. It was really weird. I remember my brother playing Tomb Raider when we were kids, and it's very hard for me to go back to now. Okay, number two. This one is the latest in the Activision Blizzard Microsoft acquisition process.
Can we just call it a saga at this point instead
yeah,
of
Yeah, saga makes sense.
Because it's really gotten a lot more dramatic than just being a process.
That's true. ZeniMax was a process. This is an ongoing 3-year saga.
Yeah,
it's going to end up being 2 years, maybe 2.5. But with the FTC lawsuit last week, I think they scheduled the first like hearing or court or whatever for this like well into this year. I think I might have even read October. So this is definitely not going to be done by mid-year like they were hoping. But the latest wrinkle in this is that Microsoft is said to have, and this is Bloomberg reporting, that they've now offered PlayStation the 10-year deal with the enhancement of the option to include it on PlayStation Plus, because that was one of the things that was complained about in Sony's countersuit or not countersuit statement to officials, was that they could lock it up on Game Pass and not allow it on PlayStation Plus. And that, even though it would be available on PlayStation systems, would still be a disadvantage. I know we're all sick of listening and talking about this topic, so we don't have to beat it to death, but I do want to say my one thought is like you acquire something because it has benefit to your company. And if your competitors' complaints are this makes our competitor stronger, that doesn't mean it hurts consumers. But Xbox is in last place and kind of by a long margin. And so I've shared at length why I think no one acquiring them is the right solution, but I don't think that that's on the table, because I think if it wasn't Microsoft, it would be Tencent or
yes.
Embracer or somebody else. So yeah, I'm going to stop there. I don't care if they want to offer it to them on PlayStation, Game Pass, and, you know, 10-year deal. Like, every gamer should say this. it being on both platforms doesn't hurt me. I don't need games to be exclusive. I want games to be available where I play. If it's on my friend's console that I don't have, that doesn't hurt me. That's fine. Great. Publish it on PlayStation. Put it on PS Plus. It's all good with me. Guys, any thoughts?
I agree completely with that. I honestly, I think that at this point, because Activision was actively shopping themselves, Microsoft winning this case and getting this acquisition is best case scenario for everyone.
Or least bad scenario.
Yeah, because we don't want it going to Tencent. We don't want it to going to whatever that
Saudi Royal. Yeah.
Right. We don't want it to going to either of those two companies. Embracer, probably not as bad, but I still think that Microsoft acquiring it is the best case out of all of those options.
Yeah, Embracer still has kind of a weird stink on it. Like, they're putting a lot of money in, but we're not seeing results yet.
Yeah.
You could say the same of Microsoft, but at least Microsoft is a big company, a US company, and they have deep pockets. And Embracer seems to also, but I don't know, like even this Tomb Raider thing.
Worst
like,
case scenario is Tencent.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yes. Worst case scenario.
I don't know. I think the Saudi Royal
that
Wealth
one
Fund
actually,
is worse.
That's pretty close.
Yeah, it's like, do you, the two of those. Yeah. Yeah, it's, yeah. So
Call of Duty will look drastically different from the last two Modern Warfare games if a Saudi royal family owns the games.
Or the Chinese government gets their hand on it.
Yeah.
Also, I don't know why I'm saying honestly. Microsoft is going to do anything, any concession they have to get the deal done because they have a $2 or $3 billion. I always say two or three because I can't remember which number it is. Cut clause. Like if they can't close the deal, they owe Activision Blizzard $2 or $3 billion. That is a huge incentive for them to make any concession, literally any and every concession that is necessary.
Yep.
Obviously, 10-year deal is probably the best that they can commit to because that's like a console generation and a half. And no lawyer is going to be like, yeah, let's commit to 30 years because 30 years from now, video games could be hover chairs in holographic rooms or who knows what we'll have in 30 years.
You covered the Nintendo and Steam announcements last week's episode, right?
Yep, that was last week, which obviously hasn't been on Nintendo platforms, I believe, since Call of Duty Ghosts, maybe the one after that. And it's a huge win, but obviously they also left Nintendo because not enough sales was happening on that platform. So still, I think having the option to get it on Steam, I mean, at this point, you'll be able to get it on Steam, Windows Launcher, Xbox, hopefully PlayStation to get the deal all figured out, and now Nintendo. So it really is going to be available more places than it was before, and potentially also on Game Pass and PlayStation Plus, which are two subscription options. So Call of Duty will be available more places and through more payment methods under the Xbox proposed deal.
Yeah. I think it was a strategic move on Microsoft's part to do the Nintendo deal.
Yeah, it's great PR.
And to reconfirm with Steam that they would allow it was essentially it was something that they could take to these governing boards and go, everything that Sony is saying is not what we're doing. So I think that's what that move was. A little bit of a chess move while Sony's playing checkers.
I saw a former the guy that worked at the FTC during Microsoft's antitrust lawsuits in the 90s, the one that led that campaign against Microsoft and won the initial court case. He was interviewed and he said that he doesn't know what the FTC is doing because all of their filings are littered with errors. And well, not all, but they definitely have some true inaccuracies, like especially stuff they've cited about the ZeniMax deal and some other things that like they cited the EU governing body, and then the EU governing body came out publicly and said, no, that's not what happened. But I don't know. It's a mess. I do think it's funny that so many people are predicting this not to go through. Like I would bet, I would bet a lot of money that this goes through because of how much money Microsoft has to lose if it doesn't. I mean, you have a lot of incentive to make the deal go through. $3 billion is a lot of money. Especially for Activision, if it doesn't go through, like for them to just get $3 billion for the, you know, being in the news for 2 years, that would be a huge boon. And they're still probably going to try and sell to somebody else after that. So Gus,
I mean, not only that, but the money they stand to make by like, you keep talking about how much money they stand to lose. I mean, I guess it probably goes without saying the amount of money you can make by owning Activision as Microsoft. But I mean, that's still, that in and of itself is going to be a lot more than $2 or $3 billion that they would lose if they weren't to get the deal done. So I think they, obviously those incentives work either way. They don't want to lose money and they want to make a lot of money too while they're doing it. So I'm with
you. Know,
you.
One of the things that nobody seems to care about, because, I mean, obviously this is about consumer protections, is that when companies like this merge, there's probably going to be some job losses, right? Like, there's going to be things you don't need at Activision now because you're part of the mothership, like marketing and accounting, and some of that stuff will get streamlined. Although we didn't hear a lot about that when they merged with Bethesda, because they kept them kind of as a separate subsidiary.
I think somewhere I just read recently that Microsoft was kind of already starting to consolidate some jobs, and there were some people
administrative roles, non-creative roles. Yeah.
In preparation for this to go through.
Well, I guess my whole point from what I learned in business class in high school and amongst other places, that you talk about when you like, how like this is like Sony's turning this into like a competition type thing. The thing is that Microsoft is not purely a video game company, same way that Sony is not purely a video game company. So I don't understand why they think that this is like right here is going to be like if Microsoft was saying, yeah, we're also going to be buying like Mitsubishi, what, that's a bad example now, but like, or like Sam, like we're also buying Samsung, or like all this other, like any other tech company. And I could see that being a much more of a bigger issue than just Call of Duty. Cause that seems to be that that's all that Sony cares about is Call of Duty, which valid, but also not the end of the world.
It makes them a lot of money.
Yeah.
Well,
I guess,
it's,
that's agree.
So there's two types of acquisitions, Gus. There's one where two competitors combine to make a bigger entity, like, T-Mobile Sprint, right?
Yeah.
And there's a vertical merger, which is where you don't acquire a competitor, you acquire someone that is a downstream, like a car company acquiring a seat manufacturer, or a video game company acquiring a motion capture studio. It's not a competitor, it's somebody that supports a piece of it. So usually
the
antitrust
FTC
organizations
mostly,
are more supportive of vertical mergers because it doesn't harm competition.
Precisely, yeah, because it's like, it's not like the whole reason that like the FTC and like all these other laws around the FTC exist is to prevent monopolizing, which this is not what is happening. It's like, they're not, like, just by them acquiring Activision, they're not monopolizing the game industry. Now it's like, now Sony might disagree, and I'm sure a lot of people probably might disagree with me as well by saying this, that I don't think that that they're monopolizing the game industry just by simply buying Activision. But I mean, there are a lot of companies out there. I mean, it's sorry that Sony was slow to the punch, but I mean, it's not, again, like Sony can work on, I mean, they already have their own big exclusives that Microsoft has no part of. And now and we've talked about this as well as part of this, is that they're Microsoft is willing to give Call of Duty to like PlayStation Plus. And like they're making all these concessions, like I don't know, I'm just having such a hard time understanding like why Sony just doesn't they've got to give it up. And that's not me as an Xbox fanboy. It's just like all the I feel like all they're gonna do is like all that Sony has done recently is hurt their own image. Like that is all that this is, like all they just sound like butthurt crybabies. Sorry, that's what they sound like.
You're right that they do look bad in the press with what they've been doing, but you can't argue that it isn't working, right? Like they have gotten concessions. They are getting blockages from the FTC. Like their whining and complaining is working. And if anything, it's just getting them more concessions out of Microsoft. Okay, sorry about that. We just had a tech, I don't know what you call it, a snafu, where our recording crashed. So we're back. We were saying something about the Microsoft PlayStation deal. I think I was about to say that it's weird because PlayStation could, like, if PlayStation made a deal with Activision to make Call of Duty an exclusive, you know, just a publishing deal, and they bought out the exclusive rights to the next five Call of Duties or whatever, that wouldn't go under FTC review because it's not a merger or acquisition or anything, but it would have the same effect of what they're like accusing Microsoft of. And honestly, I don't think it harms consumers to lock up future Call of Duties onto one platform. I know this is not a popular opinion, and Brett, you can you usually call me on my BS if I'm wrong, but because you've had every Call of Duty game up to this point doesn't guarantee you every Call of Duty game into the future. Like, every game is its own thing, and there have been exclusive DLCs and timed DLC releases of maps and stuff on different platforms. But if you buy, I don't see a reason why you shouldn't be allowed to buy any publisher that you want to make a deal with that wants to be acquired and make all their games exclusive. Like, PlayStation has done it. Xbox has done it. They both worked with studios, and people are quick to criticize them for buying ZeniMax and making some of their franchise, some new games that was ZeniMax exclusive, like Redfall and Starfield. I wanted to say Skyfall, which is Skyrim with James Bond.
Skyrim 2.
Yes. But they have a longstanding relationship with Xbox, publishing Morrowind and Oblivion as exclusives originally, and then DLC packs for Oblivion. This was all said by Todd Howard recently in an interview, which is why it's fresh in my mind. But also, I mean, you can buy an Xbox. It's cheap. You could also play these games through streaming and all these other ways. Like, I just, does it harm consumer choice? Is Call of Duty standalone? Like, all the arguments that have been made just seem kind of hollow to me. And I mean, Xbox gamers felt this way about Spider-Man. Like, it was a deal for one game series, and it wasn't as big as Call of Duty, but Spider-Man's pretty big and universally loved. And to have PlayStation be the only place you could play Spider-Man, MLB The Show, and some other major things that are huge in the gaming space, has really helped Sony grow its market share in the last few generations, especially their, you know, relationship with Destiny and their relationship with Call of Duty. So you can make the case that Sony has been benefiting from what they're accusing Xbox of. They just haven't done as much in the way of acquisitions. They've done it all through backdoor money deals. And it has harmed competition to the point where PlayStation has a double market share lead in units over Xbox. So
honestly, my opinion is that method is actually worse. Because you're not going the extra mile to actually just get the studio, and then everything from that point on just is yours. You're just making a deal to say, no, the other people can't have it. That's more anti-consumer, in my opinion, than just buying a studio and then deciding this game is going to be exclusive, this series is going to be multi-platform. You know, it's the other thing about this is, like, don't tell me that Sony wouldn't have done the exact same thing if they had deep enough pockets. They would have made a move for this, but they don't have the money to do it.
Well, they did just buy Bungie, and Bungie said our games will stay multi-platform. They did the exact thing that Microsoft says they're doing with Call of Duty. We're going to buy this. It's going to stay multi-platform. And because Bungie was a smaller purchase, nobody blinked an eye.
Right.
Even though that is the single biggest multiplayer shooter on console, not competitive, co-op multiplayer shooter on consoles and PC. So again, it's all about the scale, right? Call of Duty is the largest game in the world, and it has been for 20 years. So because of the scale, it's getting so much attention. But if you take any little argument out of it, it just doesn't fly. Like, just seems so silly. But I do understand Sony's strategy is working. If their only goal is to delay and get concessions because they know it's going to go through, I mean, it's paying off in dividends, but I don't think the end result is going to be any different. I think every Minecraft and Call of Duty game at time immemorial will continue to launch on PlayStation as long as there is gamers on that platform to make money from. So I want to move on, though, because we beat this to death. Put that on the list of things I'm sick of talking about. And every time I talk about it, I'm going to tell you how sick of talking about it I am. But
there's going to be something new every week, though.
Yeah, well, some of it can be ignored, right? Like, so-and-so said this mean thing to so-and-so and blah, blah, blah. Generally just trying to hit the big beats. And usually we bury it in the quick hits. So it's like, hey, this was the update this week. But this week we have Brett on, so there's more, you know, get your opinion. And I don't know, I went on a rant. I'm sorry, listeners. Moving on. Number three, Hogwarts Legacy has been delayed. And when I put this in the news, I thought the whole game was delayed. It's only the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One version. So then they now have a three different release date strategy. So let me read you what their Twitter said. It said Hogwarts Legacy will launch on April 4th, 2023 for PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, and on July 25th, 2023 for Nintendo Switch. The team is looking forward to bringing you the game, and we want to deliver the best possible game experience across all platforms. So now you've got current gen, February 10th, last gen, April 4th, and the side gen Switch in July 25th. So it was more of a story when I thought they were delaying the whole game 2 or 3 months, but now just delaying the older platforms. I mean, if you think about it, that is kind of an upsell to new gen, right? If you really were excited about this game, well, now you're going to want a new gen console more. And those
probably
games,
the kind of thing that CDPR should have done with Cyberpunk.
Absolutely. 100%. That's a great call out, Brett. I can't believe they're doing a Switch version of this game still, but at least they're doing it 6 months after the main game. Yeah, I don't know that I have any more to say about this. I was going to talk about it a little more when I thought it was all versions of the game, but when I reread my notes, I realized it was just last gen, and I was like, okay, that makes sense. Honestly, I don't know why everyone isn't doing this. Put your like most amazing version out first so you get, you know, good review scores and good PR, and you serve your next gen audience with the best version of the game, and then a couple months later come in, optimize, cut the resolution, cut the frame rate, do whatever you got to do to make it run on older platforms and release those slightly later. I know it kind of stinks to have scattered release dates, but I think it would lead to better products, because I think trying to launch across 6 or 7 different SKUs plus PC is what is harming some of these cross-gen games.
I think to me it suggests that they're probably working with separate builds as opposed to just trying to port and optimize.
Yeah.
That may or may not be true, but it shows that they are not trying to just shoehorn a square peg into a round hole, you know, like what CDPR did with Cyberpunk. They're working with different builds, it looks like, so that they can get the best possible version of the game for each generation or version of console.
You know, as the farther we get from the Xbox One generation, the more I have just like general disdain for that entire generation of gaming. Like when you think about the iconic games that came out during the 360 era, the Xbox One generation seems to continually be haunted by how weak the CPUs were in that system. And now that everything is cross-gen the last 3 years, it's really just kind of become an albatross around the neck of this generation. Also, I went to the grocery store today, which is, it's not a grocery store, it's a big box store. But this was the second time I'd been in there, only the second time in 2 years since the consoles came out that they had Nintendo Switch, Switch OLED, Xbox Series S, Xbox Series S Holiday Bundle, and I believe the digital and regular edition of the God of War Ragnarok PS5. So the only console they didn't have was Series X. They had literally every other SKU that's currently on the market. Well, the PS5 bundles were the ones with God of War, so they're $560, $570, whatever it is. So those aren't the most affordable. But the fact that you could get a console for every brand, and Series X being the only one missing, is kind of a bummer, because I know they said they were going to prioritize Series S for the holidays, but it kind of like, how many kids did want a Series X that their parents just aren't going to be able to get them one? I have seen them for sale on BestBuy.com and Amazon. However, I just haven't seen them in stores. So
online,
I think they are available.
The best bet.
Where?
Online is probably the best bet to get one at this point.
Yeah.
I just brick and mortar, I just don't think that anybody's getting them.
Yeah, or they're being bought up the first thing in the morning with the kinds of people that just go into the store first every day until they get whatever they're looking for. Okay, let's move on from Hogwarts Legacy. These next two are pretty small. Henry Cavill, obviously, we talked briefly about him retiring from the role of The Witcher, and this week we found out he's no longer going to be Superman, right after confirming he was going to be Superman in October after Black Adam, because of the changeover in leadership at DC. I say all that to say, the interesting piece is, and this video game adjacent, since this is an Xbox podcast, is Henry Cavill is going to produce and star in Warhammer 40K movies and TV series in a connected universe. He posted on his Instagram to confirm it after rumors and a statement from another partner in this. I'll read his Instagram post. For 30 years, I have dreamed of seeing Warhammer Universe in live action. Now, after 22 years of experience in the industry, I finally feel that I have the skill set and experience to guide a Warhammer cinematic universe into life. Partnering with Natalie Viscuso, I think, at Vertigo, has been the blessing beyond words. Without her, we might not have found the perfect home at Amazon. And having a home at Amazon will give us the freedom to be true to the massive scope of Warhammer. To all of you Warhammer fans out there, I promise to respect this IP that we love. And I lost track because I lost track of my where I was in my notes because Brett just held up his Warhammer 40K novel. I promise to bring you something familiar, and I endeavor to bring you something fantastic that is, as of yet, unseen. Our first steps are to find the filmmaker, creator, and writer. Watch this space, my friends. For the Emperor. What a nerd that guy. Like, the nerd of all nerds. I respect that man so much. He's
the king of the nerds.
He is. We have crowned you king of the nerds. Also, it's an ongoing joke on the show, Brad. I don't know how long you've been listening to the actual show, but we our pie in the sky guest for the show would be Henry Cavill.
Yeah.
Like, we have an open invitation. We should just put it in the show notes of every episode. Henry Cavill invitation extended. Waiting on reply, and we just put that in every episode. I actually tried to reach out to his agent with no success, because he's done some podcasts, even ones that are more nerdy focused. But Gus, your hands up. What's up?
I love the subtle jab at the Witcher production team by mentioning that he promises to respect the IP that everyone loves, because everyone knows how big of an absolute cluster F the Witcher production team seemed to be, and that they hated the source material. So
yeah, they came out this week and said that wasn't true, but I don't know if I believe them, because the show feels kind of...
It was an ongoing rumor for years during the production cycle.
Have you seen
that,
how bad the reviews are for Blood Origin,
God,
the prequel?
Yeah, bad, bad.
It's a shame, because it's got Michelle Yeoh in it, and she's so good, and...
Yeah,
Brett,
I just love that little jab was there.
Brett, this is perfect episode for you to be on, because we're all Warhammer noobs. So you seem really excited about this.
I am very excited about this.
The reason I think this is interesting is because, one, Henry Cavill is king of the nerds. So if he's producing, that means we're going to probably get some very faithful adaptation.
Yes.
And two, Amazon's dropping a ton of money on TV series and movies right now. I mean, the Wheel of Time and Lord of the Rings shows were some of the most expensive ever produced. And then they're putting big money into Fallout and what's that other one? I mean, he said that part of it is, what was the exact quote? Something about, freedom to be true to the massive scope of Warhammer. So
it's huge. It's so lore rich. There's so much that they could do with this if they actually get into it and then are able to expand, because it's almost infinite the amount of scope that this universe has.
It's so funny, because he talked in interviews years ago about how this was the role that he wanted, like that he always wanted to be in this universe, and somehow it seems like he has chased this down and breathed it to life.
I mean, but After what happened on The Witcher, I know a lot of people have been really skeptical about how this could go because of what happened with Wheel of Time and Rings of Power, that they weren't felt that they were very faithful adaptations. But I imagine that his signing on as producer came with a lot of strings attached, that he was going to have the power to make sure that they got the writing crew in here that was going to be faithful to this universe. So, yes, as someone who has read several of the books and also occasionally spends time going down the rabbit hole on the wiki pages, I'm really excited for this.
When I saw you get up to go get a book out of the other room, I was like, are we talking so much that he needs a book to entertain himself? Like while he discusses, and then you held it up and I was like, oh, it's a prop. So he can share all his Warhammer fandom.
Yes.
Which
yes.
There's no video version of this. If you're listening and going, oh, can I go see what he's holding up on YouTube? No, there is not a video version.
It was the Dawn of War Omnibus.
Hold it up again. I want to see it again. That is a big book.
There's three or four books all in one in this.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's why. Okay. Well, we can move on from that. I'm sure we'll have more to say as we get closer, like finding out who the writer and director and some of that is. Although
I do believe that Amazon is actually still in talks to actually get the rights from Games Workshop.
I saw like reports conflicting. Like I saw the initial one saying they were in the talks and didn't have it, but I saw another one confirming that they did get it after that.
Okay.
So I'm not sure. I'm like you. I don't know which rumor is true, that they're still in talks or if they did finally close it. But I mean, Henry announcing it, I think means that they got it.
Yeah.
Because if it was still on the fence, I don't know that Henry would have put an official.
Amazon hiring him ahead might have also been like a chess piece to offer to Games Workshop. Like, hey, we got like the super nerd to come and run this, so we'll do it right.
Yeah, and I try not to talk too much about TV show and adaptations on this podcast since we're mostly Xbox focused. So in the future, we'll probably put this towards the end of the episode so that people that don't care about it can skip past it. Same with the Fallout TV series and future seasons of Halo. I'll try and do a better job of putting that at the end of the show if you're only here to hear about the games. But game adaptations is a like booming business now, so I do like to talk about it, especially, I mean, PlayStation is doing a ton of adaptations. They're throwing stuff everywhere. But we do have Gears of War coming as well, so that's another exciting one. Isn't that at Amazon also? Somewhere else?
I don't know.
There's Fallout and Gears of War, and I think
I know
one
Dave
of them,
Bautista has been really pushing to be a part of it. That's about the extent of what I know about it.
That one's Netflix. That's what it is. So Fallout is at Amazon.
I have been seeing ads for a new 40K game.
Yeah, I saw that too.
The 360 era Space Marine game. So Space Marine 2 is, I don't think it's out yet. I don't know what the release date is, but they have been pushing ads for that recently.
I think there was a trailer for that at the Game Awards too. I can't remember. I think that's when
I started seeing it, was around Game Awards time.
I think that I know there was something Warhammer 40K at the Game Awards. I just don't remember what specifically it was.
I think it was Space Marine 2.
Yeah, which
it's already been out.
Yes, and that one I think they showed last year. The final piece of news I had would normally be in the quick hits, but I don't really have a quick hits wrap up this week, which is just that after we had that Destiny crossover with Assassin's Creed, Assassin's Creed this week is crossing over with Rainbow Six Siege. There's a skin set in there for the character Flores. So it really feels like they're doing DLC for Assassin's Creed all over the place these days. I think it might have been at Fortnite at one point. And it's Altair in Rainbow Six Siege. This one's less interesting though, because it's still Ubisoft. It's just their two studios working together to create some DLC. So not really that notable.
Kind of surprising that they haven't actually done an AC crossover with Rainbow Six sooner than this. I mean, that game's coming up on 6-7 years that it's been around.
Yeah, I also like, I don't know also why like Watch Dogs didn't get Assassin's Creed costumes and stuff. Like those games gameplay wise are so similar, but different, you know, time periods and combat mechanics. But it always seemed to me that those was a missed opportunity for Watch Dogs not to just be modern assassins. I said this way back, I think, when we first started the show and Watch Dogs 2 was on the horizon or whatever. But having Watch Dogs be in the Assassin's Creed universe, I thought would have been really cool. But retroactively, I don't think you could do it because there's too much Watch Dogs lore at this point. And I think Watch Dogs series is probably dead. I think after Legion, I'm not sure if we're going to see another one. Maybe, but every one has been so different than the last, and I don't really feel like they have an identity at this point. Okay, so to end the show, I wanted to talk about 2022 just as a year in gaming. I put a list of games here that we talked about this year. Some that nobody on the show at this exact moment will want to talk about, like obviously Pentiment and Crusader Kings 3 console were huge games that Spencer played a lot of this year. Gotham Knights was one that, you know, I've chronicled over the last month and a half of how much anger I have towards some of the design decisions in that. So we don't really need to go for a long time on this, but we're not structuring it in the, like, make a top 10 list or make your three favorite games of the year or anything like that. Obviously, we're just normal people. All of us have not played every game that came out this year, nor would we want to. This is a sampling of stuff that we played. So looking over this list or thinking about other stuff that you played that came out in 2022. So it could be DLC, a new gen update, or a new game. Nothing that didn't have a release this year. What are some of the biggest things that you thought were either highs or low points of the year? And to give you a second to think about it, obviously Gotham Knights for me was a huge low light. I wanted that game to be amazing. It wasn't. I played through the entire thing, so I feel very well qualified to complain about all the things about it that are bad. I did like a few things, like the costumes and the story, so there was some stuff there, but rough. Another one that I'm going to talk about, because I'm the only one on the show that played it, is Outriders. They had their World Slayer update this year. Oh, I forgot Brett. Sorry, I'm used to Spencer being on the show. Brett did play Outriders World Slayer. We played that together, didn't we, Brett?
I don't think I've gotten in on the World Slayer stuff yet, but I have played the game. We did go through it and finish the main campaign, so...
Yep. Yeah, World Slayer, loved that. Love Outriders. I hope there's another one. Underrated game, by the way. Like, yeah. If you've not played Outriders, I think it's critically underrated. Like, it does have a couple of things about it that are a little bit of AA-ness to it, but mostly it's a solid AAA game with satisfying combat, really cool upgrade trees, and ways you can combine things to make really fun builds. And once I got into it, I just really kind of fell in love with that world too. I thought it had a cool story, interesting alien world, you know, Earth trying to survive. So I wanted to highlight that just because I don't think it gets the love that it should. In fact, Outrage World Slayer obviously was not in any Game of the Year conversations or anything like that. And I'm not sure that it should be, but it's a solid game, especially in a year where we had a lot of duds.
No, it was good. I definitely want to continue playing it at some point when I'm not neck deep in Tarkov and Call of Duty.
You're never going to pull yourself out of Tarkov. You're going to be a Tarkov addict 10 years
we'll
from
see.
Now. Gus, what about you? Anything that new this year? Obviously, you just talked about why am I blanking on the game you literally
Midnight
have paused
Suns.
Right now?
Midnight
Suns. I wanted to say Gotham Knights, but obviously, God. Gotham Knights, Midnight Suns, two different
Gotham,
teams.
I'm not playing Gotham Knights.
What's some stuff you played this year? You know, I was going down the list, and it seems like 3 years ago, but Lego Star Wars only came out this year. Isn't that nuts?
Yeah. I was thinking about that because of the fact that it did come out this year, and I know we've been talking about it for such a long time. But and I know I haven't really played it recently as much as I would like, because I have Midnight Suns. I've been playing lots of Hearts of Iron. I'm playing lots of Marvel Snap. But the thing is, Marvel Snap, I can play that anywhere. I can play that while I'm playing Xbox if I really want to. So it's like kind of hard to say. I would say for me, console wise, yes, the Skywalker Saga, Lego Star Wars was definitely my number one. Just because because of the nostalgia, and I really much enjoyed it, and I wholeheartedly plan on coming back to it. So,
Brett, what about you? You're obviously not a regular on the show. So what did you play this year that came out this year that you thought was either notably good or notably bad?
Elden Ring.
Oh, yes.
I called Game of the Year for that, too, by the way. I was a little worried that Sony was trying to buy it, because obviously when they got Ragnarok in there, games that release that late in the year don't usually go on the same year's Game of the Year
list.
There
is an official cutoff date, and I forget what it is. But Pentiment, I forget, did Pentiment make the cutoff? Or I think they were nominated, right?
I don't know.
Either Pentiment was or was not, because they were right on the week of the cutoff. And I can't remember which way it went, but Pentiment was close.
But yeah, for me, it was Elden Ring. I've got a Elite 2 controller that barely works now because I played so much Elden Ring.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Your right bumper button is damaged beyond salvage.
Yeah, that game was just so fantastic. And I'm not like, I'm not a Souls fan or Souls regular. I've played numerous games within the franchise. I think the only one I ever beat before Elden Ring was Dark Souls 3. I've played a lot of Bloodborne, but not really made much progress in it. So Elden Ring, I think the open world format really, really fit really well with that game. And I'm not someone who loves open world games a whole lot. I just thought it gelled really well with that game, where it's like, hey, I'm underleveled. I can go anywhere I want on the map and go farm and build up my levels, and then I can go back to this boss. I just thought it was really cool. The world building was amazing. So that, for me, it was game of the year right out the gate, and I was happy to see them actually get that award.
Yeah, I was surprised at how much I liked Elden Ring. Even though I haven't beat it, I bought it, and it's my first Soulsborne game of all. And Brett, you helped me with that, playing it.
Yeah, happy to help you more anytime you want to.
Yeah, I'm not sure where that one falls on my list. It's definitely getting down there. I have a short list of games that I'm hoping to get through, I don't know, by the end of the year and early next year. But I have so little time. Like, all my kids are sick right now, so I have even less time because I'm, you know, basically always holding a sick child. They're asleep right now. Okay, so back to me. So just, I guess, a reminder for everybody, it seems like, again, years ago, but Cyberpunk 2077 got its next-gen release this year, which really changed the game for a lot of people. And it's when the conversation around Cyberpunk went from this game is a bomb because they launched so hard to this game is really solid. I know Spencer loved it, and speaking for him, and enjoyed it once the update was out, and you know, he finished it. I still haven't finished it, but I've loved what I played. I'm notorious for bouncing around between games and never finishing anything at this point. I did also compare, so I keep track of the games I abandon, the ones I intend to finish, and the ones I complete in a given year. And this is going to be my lowest completion year in maybe since the height of Destiny 1, which is weird. But I also did play a lot of deeper games that take a long time. Like, I had a lot of hours in Horizon Forbidden West. I had a lot of hours, well, wasted hours. I played like 30 hours of Gotham Knights. 30 is not too much, but the more and more I play like games that take 30 to 100 hours, the less I play, you know, a lot more small experiences. This isn't a low light as much as it is kind of a disappointment. And, well, I have two things. Saints Row. On this show, we're generally big fans of Saints Row, especially Spencer and I. And neither of us bought the new one after seeing kind of the general reception and the reviews. So that was a little bit of a letdown. I do intend to still play it once they get some patches out and the price comes down, and it's on sale right now, I think, for $40. But I think, since I already have enough to play right now, I'll pick it up sometime when it's slow next year for $20 or $30. And that just seems right based on the reception. But that was a letdown because, again, I don't have firsthand experience, but watching the marketplace respond to how the game released and going, oh man, that doesn't sound like what I was hoping for. But on the opposite side of that, Deathloop came to Xbox this year. So it was a new release on Xbox because it was a PlayStation exclusive for a year. Man, did that game wow me. I am still planning on going back and playing more of it because it's just so good. Brett, you should play Deathloop. It's a great game.
I've been on the fence about it.
The fact that it's on Game Pass, I don't like roguelikes too much, depending on their design. I don't like the idea of having to start over and over again without feeling like I'm making progress. So the way a game builds in the way to progress through a loop is the key to whether I will like it or not. Like, I liked Hades because after each run, you got stronger and you felt like good progression, and the random generation of the worlds gave it some differentiation without feeling like you're in the same corridor all the time, like you felt like in Marvel's Avengers.
That's one I need to go back to, too. I did have fun with it, but I didn't. I only made like a handful of runs at it, but I did enjoy it.
Yeah, very solid. What was I just talking about? Not Hades.
Deathloop.
Deathloop's time loop mechanic and solving the puzzle, and it actually does a really good job through the journal of, if you click on the different people, it kind of carrots you through the loops, because it's not like, see how far you can get in a run. It's a narrative. So you have to go to specific locations within different parts of the world at different times of day. If you wanted to treat it like a linear game, you could make it a linear game with looping, restarting. So even though the day's repeating, no day's the same, because your character still remembers the previous loops, and even some characters within the world remember the previous loops. So they're not really loops, because each loop, you feel like you're making progress. It's only really frustrating when you make absolutely no progress on a loop, and I've only had that happen maybe twice. So I really, really appreciate it. Plus, the gameplay is just so solid. Like, the stealth mechanics feel amazing. There's so few good stealth games these days, and the ability to like customize your builds and your mixing of your abilities, and they're not called charms in Deathloop, but the charms, whatever they're called, I forget the name of the card things, to give you different abilities and strengths, it's just really solid. Let's see, Destroy All Humans 2 came out this year. Gus, I know you played that. I'm speaking for you a little bit, but I'm assuming that one was one that kind of just flew by. Didn't exactly make your best of the year, but
yeah,
also wasn't.
It had a lot of cool stuff in it, but I mean, it is an old game, so
yeah, re-release. A lot of that this year, a lot of re-releases, also a lot of DLC and a lot of next generation updates. Like, another DLC we had this year, Forza Horizon 5 Hot Wheels. Gus, did you get the Hot Wheels expansion? I know I did.
I did not.
I don't remember. Spencer did, because he bought the expansion. I remember that. So that was cool. But it's DLC and it's more of the same, except for on Hot Wheels. So it's hard to like call that a best of the year. Brett, what about you? Other stuff that came out this year that you thought was exciting? I've got a list there of some titles if that sparks any memories for you.
I did jump back in with Cyberpunk a little bit with the next gen version, and it does look amazing. On that list, there's really not a whole lot that I've actually gotten into outside of what we've already talked about, other than Call of Duty,
which
I think is still really a work in progress right now. It's very up and down with the community. Personally, I love a lot of the changes that they've made. They feel more like the original Modern Warfare first two games. I'm still not a big Warzone player, but, I'm willing to give it a go here and there.
Yeah, I haven't installed, but honestly, I only really like playing Battle Royales when I play with friends, and Spencer and Gus is what I was trying to say, and I combined them into Genser. They don't play Battle Royale, either of them. And right. So I usually only play with you and some of our shared friends, but it seems lately, in the last couple months, we almost never align when we're online.
Everybody gets on too late. I go to bed early.
Yeah, you have to get up early for your work, so you're off before I even get on around 8 or 9. Sometimes we see each other for like 30 minutes in a party, and then you have to go to bed, and I'm just getting spun up. But yeah, some other notable just like quick shots is Nobody Saves the World. That was a really fun game from the developers of Guacamelee 1 and 2. I really liked that game. I didn't finish it, and I don't know that I'm going to go back. Not because I don't like it, because I do, but just because I have just way too much on my plate. And I'm trying to be more discerning about when is a game something I want to finish, and when is a game something I just want to experience, and then I'm okay not finishing. Because at my age, with my job and my kids and my family, I have a set number of hours per week that I can play, and I want those to be with the things I really want to spend time with. And there are games that I want to experience because I like the developer, or I think they're interesting, but I don't want to commit 100 hours to seeing all of it. And because I'm not writing reviews for a website where I need to be comprehensive and, see an entire game to give a verdict for it. I play games naturally. It's the way we do it on the show. And I tell you how much of the game I've played when I give you my opinion. So if you're listening to me and you say, I only played 5 hours of this game and I liked it, but I don't feel the need to see more. That's what it is. And I've told you all the details so you can decide for yourself whether my opinion is valid based on how much time I played. And a lot of people probably go, no, Tim, you didn't see that to the end and it gets really good 80 hours in. And I bet it does. But I was okay not seeing hour 80 because I felt like I'd seen enough after hour 10. So that is one thing that 10 years ago me did not learn. And I would try and see every game through to completion. And that's how I ended up with backlogs of 50, 100 games that I wanted to play. Now my backlog, I've got it down to about 20, 25 games that I really want to see all of. And even those is ambitious with the amount of time I have to do those because new games are always coming out, right? So there's my monologue. I think all in all, and Brett, I want to hear your opinion on this briefly because you aren't regularly on the show. I feel like this was a boring year for game releases. We had a few bright spots. We had the Elden Ring. We had Call of Duty was a fairly significant restart this year. And we had some other, you know, dots here and there. But I feel like there were more letdowns than there were excitements. Like even High on Life has gotten kind of a mediocre reception, even though I personally like it. Not great. Saints Row, not great. Gotham Knights, not great. I'm trying to think what else came out this year. Just a lot of stuff was a letdown, and there were just fewer games. So I feel like, honestly, starting into 23, getting farther and farther away from the pandemic, I hope things keep improving with the quality and the quantity of releases. And honestly, I'm also excited. We don't know a lot of what's coming next year. We know Starfield and we know Redfall from Xbox, but besides that, we don't really know. And it's got to at some point start increasing because they acquired like so many dozens of studios and we really haven't seen a lot of production out of all of those yet. So that means their thing is in the works. So all that to say, Brett, how did you feel about 2022?
I mean, I got enough out of it for games that I could obsess with and spend weeks or months playing like I did. Excuse me. I think I've probably spent 6 months, maybe a little bit less, just playing mostly Elden Ring. That's why I haven't played a lot of the other stuff. I've revisited Cyberpunk. I'm really into Modern Warfare 2 right now. In terms of amount of content, it was fine for me because I tend to just pick up a game or two and just play those for an extended period of time. But yeah, I think there wasn't a huge breadth of content overall, and it does seem a lot of it was pretty lackluster. So hopefully that's something that can be fixed going forward. I don't know if it's still just issues stemming from pandemic problems and too much work from home. I don't know, but I hope that the quality starts to tick up because I think more and more members of the gaming community are getting fed up with low quality games, especially with prices now going up.
Yeah. Yep. Gus, you want to put a final point on 2022? Is how did you feel about this year, the stuff you played, the stuff you're excited about that let you down? Any final point?
No, I feel like, and we mentioned this earlier, just the lack of games, about how there wasn't really a whole lot coming out. It seemed like we were just delay after delay.
Yeah, delays. It was delay-mageddon, like, for sure.
Yeah, just kind of puts like a damper on the year as a whole. But I, like I said, good stuff did come out. Not all of it console-related. I mean, you and I are big fans of Marvel Snap, so that's big right now.
Do you play Snap, Brett?
I haven't been back on it in a while, but I spent a good portion of Thanksgiving Day playing it at my in-laws' house.
When we get the PvP update, we'll have to get on each other's friends list so we can battle it out, me, you, and Gus.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... Yeah.
Sorry, Gus, go.
No, you're good. So I guess with those being said about Marvel Snap, and then, I mean, like I said, I really enjoyed LEGO Star Wars, and I was happy to see that back. That'll probably be a game that I play for a long time, just like throughout the years, just something that I'll come back to because I doubt they're going to make another one anytime soon. I hope that they use it as a platform for for releases like Clone Wars like stuff. Like they get more of the animated show stuff. I mean, I think we're getting like an Andor pack at some point. So I'm excited for all of that to see kind of how that game develops, because I think it's a good platform game for them to continue to launch family friendly Star Wars content. So yeah
I actually like just messaged general... you because yeah. the Star Wars Collection Pack 2, which includes Andor, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Book of Boba Fett, and a couple other shows for Star Wars, Lego Star Wars, is on sale on the end of year sale for $7 or $8. So
yeah, because it's not like they don't already have sets of these coming out, so they already have character models.
Yeah, well, and this is the like collection of all the DLC that they announced for like the second year of the game or whatever it is, the bigger, you know, I forget what they call it, the Galactic Collection. You know, there was a new version of it we talked about a few weeks ago. Yeah, you just reminded me of something else too, and I can't remember what it was, but yeah. That's what it was, the countdown sale. So if there's anything on your wish list, just a public service announcement, the Xbox countdown sale, which is their end of year sale, which this, the Black Friday sale and the like March spring sale are the three biggest sales on the digital Xbox storefront every year. So usually this is the best prices you're going to get for the year because we're deep into the year. So if there's anything you were waiting to buy, it's probably on sale. One other note alongside that, remember Witcher 3 has frequently had the Game of the Year edition on sale for $10 or $15 on every sale for the last 2 or 3 years. With the upgrade to the complete edition with the new gen update, they've taken that as an opportunity to raise prices. So you could have bought the Game of the Year edition for $10 or $15 at Black Friday, and it would have free upgraded to the complete edition. But now the lowest price they're doing for the new game complete edition is like, I think, $30 on sale. Full price is $40. So they did raise prices, even the sale prices, after the upgrade to the complete edition. So I thought that was interesting. I'm sure it'll go back down very quickly after sales calm down, but they are kind of riding the buzz of the new gen update, and as they should. I mean, they added ray tracing and a lot of stuff to make a very significant upgrade. It was not like a quick turn and burn upgrade. Like I'm trying to think of a game that did it really poorly. Batman Arkham Collection, where it's just up-res versions of literally the exact same game. Yeah, well, we can end it there. I think that's a good wrap up. Like I said, no show next week, which is the December 26th show. We're going to take a week off for the holidays. We will be back January. I lost my notes. Is it January 2nd or January 3rd? January 2nd. Yep. And hopefully Spencer's back for that show. And if Spencer has any final thoughts for the year that he wants to share, since he was unable to make our end of year show, we will have him to discuss that at that time. Let me say thanks again, Brett, for joining on 5 minutes notice.
Thank you for having me.
Honestly, I didn't expect you to even be home, so it was very much a long shot. But yes, thank you for being here so much. And Gus, thank you as always for being reliable and being here as well.
Of course.
And we will see everyone in the new year. Happy New Year. I guess I should do the normal outro, huh? I'm Tim Shelton. You can follow me on Twitter, @TimShelton.
I'm Gus Harden.
And I am Brett Kemmerling.
Thanks for listening. See you next week.
New episodes post every Monday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. You can contact us on Twitter at MultiformPod or by email at questions@multiformpodcast.com. If you enjoyed our show and you're feeling extra generous, please share it with your friends or on social media. You can subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or anywhere you listen.